and welcome to another edition. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamparo, naturopathic physician, herbalist with the American Herbalist Guild, and usually here with my illustrious co-host, Dr. Kamai, who has the day off. And remember, you can get all information by visiting the website naturalnurse.com for our latest projects and ebooks and the FibroFix seminars and different webinars we're doing and all our projects here. We're really excited to be with you again. And we have a really interesting guest here, that's for sure. I remember him when I was a student at Bastyr University back out in Seattle a long time ago, and that's Dr. Dean Howell. And Dr. Howell was born and raised in Everett, Washington, as a graduate of Bastyr University of Natural Medicine and has a degree in mathematics. I remember Dr. Howell would come in and lecture about his very interesting physical medicine treatments. He kind of was involved in physical medicine at that time and still is, and actually he's the inventor and developer of neurocranial restructuring, which is clinically tested over the past 35 years. It's a type of manipulation process involving various releases of the body's connective tissue tension to unwind the body and return it towards its original design. Very powerful and effective for permanent relief for all types of chronic pain without prescriptions, painkillers, invasive surgery, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to have Dr. Howell on the program here to discuss this very informative and unique treatment. Hey, Dean, how are you?
I'm doing really well, Eugene. How are you doing?
Good, good. Yeah, a long time ago you came into class. I'm a 1990 graduate of Bastyr, so I was kind of in the late 80s. I was a student there, and I remember you would come in and talk about it, and we found it very interesting.
Yeah, you were in my ear, nose, and throat therapy class.
That's right.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm so happy to have you. And when I heard that you were kind of doing this and getting involved in reaching out to the public, I had to invite you on the show. So welcome again.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about neurocranial restructuring. Now, wait a minute. Let's just backtrack. You know, sometimes I just assume that everyone, even my own listeners, knows about naturopathic medicine, and I always use the program as a forum because we are pioneers in natural medicine, and people don't understand the difference between a holistic doctor, an MD who goes green and natural, and a naturopathic doctor, but we have a unique philosophy. Care to share your version of our profession with the listeners?
Well, you know, when I grew up, I was chronically ill from, like, Halloween to Easter every year when I was, like, 5 years old, 7 years old, 10 years old. I always had chronic bronchitis, and when I was 10, I heard the doctor shouting at somebody over the phone, "What can I do for that kid?" And I went home that night, and I told my father, who was a dentist, I knew why they called what doctors did practice. And he said, "Why is that?" And he said, "Because Dr. Nix doesn't know what he's doing, he's practicing on me." So when I got into college and was studying math, I started finding out that changing my lifestyle stopped getting that bronchitis. And then I did at first I tried fasting and vegetarianism and almost died. And Dr. Diadamo, the senior, worked with my lifestyle further, and I stopped getting sick. So the cause of my illness was not an antibiotic deficiency. It was instead an underlying problem. And I went into medicine because I didn't want to be exposed to the dental chemicals. I was too ill. But it was additionally because mainstream medicine didn't make sense. It was hoping that the problem would go away while it treated my symptoms. So I cried when Dr. Bastyr administered my naturopathic oath, because I knew I was going to go out there and treat the reason people were sick instead of treating their symptoms while we waited for God to get them better. Right. And that, to me, is the big difference between naturopaths and mainstream allopathic medical community.
Yeah, thank you for that. So then what led you? I mean, we have so many tools in our toolbox as naturopathic physicians, all relying on the healing power of nature and getting out of the way and removing obstacles to cure and getting to the underlying cause and all those things like that. But how did you unearth that this particular type of physical medicine, I guess it's a type of physical medicine, was one of the keys.
Well, here was the thing. What we were taught in school and do in our daily practices is that we do work with changing people's diets to make more sense, avoiding the foods that they're sensitive to and foods that are toxic, like commercial meat and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We do that. We worry about exposure to wireless networks and cell phone radiation and other environmental factors. And all that was real fundamental. It was cause-oriented. Detox people that had been exposed to heavy metals, so using various kinds of methods to try to chelate those metals back out. Okay, that all made sense. Then we were also taught spinal manipulation and external cranial manipulation and Bence Jones counter strain and all those different kinds of bodywork techniques, and few of them lasted. They were almost all about symptom treatment. And in my own case, I would be, well, summers, so I was a competitive water skier and I played football, and I had uncountable numbers of head injuries, including a number of concussions, because I would hit the water when I would do slalom skiing at 70 miles an hour. And one of those times I broke a water ski with my face. I really recommend you not do that. because after that, I had no airflow through my right nostril. My right cheek was about a half inch lower than my left, and I just looked weird. But worse than that is I couldn't breathe. So I heard about this old technique going back to the 1930s, using a small balloon slid through the nose into the top of the throat to mechanically open the airway. And so I found the guy that was keeping it alive. His name was J.R. Stober, and he was in Portland and Seattle. He was at D.C. ND, chiropractor and naturopath, from the 50s. And I worked out a system so I could work with him, and he started checking my work. He didn't exactly train me. He had me watch and figure it out myself and then show him that I was successful. And that work proved to be somewhat temporary as well. So then I had to figure out, why was it that spinal manipulations and massage, cranial manipulations, why was it that they were all symptom-oriented and they didn't make long-term change? So it took me until the mid-90s to realize that the ignored fact had to do with stability of the structure. And so when people would come in hurting, limited mobility, if I had them stand up and I pushed on them, I could determine their stability. And if I treated them in the ways that I had been trained, and then they stood up again afterwards, even though they felt better and had better range of motion, the symptoms, you see, were improved. Objectively, they were less stable. And that proved to be so alarming to the central nervous system that the body would slightly tighten the muscles, and the connective tissues can even slightly elongate, slightly contract, and they would gradually revert to where they were before the treatment. So I started accumulating the treatment methods that would improve that pattern of stability while I also got rid of their pain and lack of mobility. And then I found out that treatments would accumulate, and I could take sequential photographs or x-rays or any other objective measure, and we could see the steady, continual improvement that could work over a period of years. The person could get steadily better. I found out it worked better still if I did a 4-day work sequence and then took a month or two or six off, and then another 4-day sequence, and we could, it's just like adding money to a savings account. You could keep getting a little better and a little better. That made it totally different than all the rest of the physical medicine. And it's the only physical medicine technique that's naturopathically derived, because I was never a chiropractor or osteopath or massage therapist or physical therapist. It was totally my desire to treat cause is the way I developed that physical medicine technique, and these other people were all trying to create businesses.
Now, how is
that's awesome. Yeah, very interesting. So how is the structure of someone's body related to, you know, their health? I mean, people sort of understand, well, you know, if they have a problem in their blood, you know, like not enough albumin, not enough protein, okay, that can cause swelling. So that's a biochemical thing going on there. But I still think we're not, most lay people, like listeners out there, don't understand the paradigm of how the structure changes the function. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. So there's two main avenues here where structure makes a huge difference. The first is just your musculoskeletal system. In other words, your skeleton and the muscles. And if you look at most people, if you were to have them stand and you would do photographs like, kind of like mug shots, you know what I mean? They're full body pictures. If you started drawing lines between, let's say, across their shoulders, through eye, ear to ear, through the corners of their mouth, through the corners of their pelvis, you'll see that most people are not all nice little parallel lines creating nice even rectangles. They'll be distorted in different kinds of trapezoids and rhomboids and stuff like that. Weird, crooked lines, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the way that our muscles and joints work are compromised because they are designed for your maximum efficiency of your muscle for you to be all symmetrical. And so at first, that's what we were doing in physical medicine, making people symmetrical. The problem being that it wouldn't stay. So the newer work was a way to make it stay and accumulate. We can get the person more and more evened out so that they can jump higher, run faster, lift more weight. And it does work that way, by the way, for athletes. I work with professional athletes and others, and we can steadily see their performance improves when everybody else on their teams is staying the same or, as the season goes along, getting worse. And if we do our work, we can get them better and better. I used to be a team physician to the U.S. Women's Karate Team. It was the same thing. They would get kicked and punched so much that they would start having limited ranges of motion, and that even limited how they could kick and punch. And when I would work with them to even them back out, then their kicks and punches would be better. So there's that musculoskeletal part. Now the other part is working with the brain, and the brain runs on fluid. We do fluids, blood and cerebrospinal fluid. So we have to deliver blood and neurotransmitters to each portion of the brain for that portion to work right. And the law of hydraulics, the laws of hydraulics in the physics engineering kind of aspect, they are the where fluids flow in a closed hydraulic system is decided by the shape of the vessel that holds all that fluid. In other words, if we move head bones into different positions, then the flow of blood and cerebrospinal fluid is different for the skull and the brain. So if we start making you more and more the way you were designed, moving your bones back to that original blueprint that maybe because of birth difficulties and falls and beatings and accidents and your face collapsing from pulling teeth and the well-meaning orthodontist straightening your teeth without straightening your head, all of these things cause the brain to be slightly squeezed. And when it's slightly squeezed like that, those areas of the brain that are being pinched, when they're being pinched, then they can't work right. So I work with people with chronic anxiety, chronic depression, learning disabilities. We get results with obsessive compulsive disorder, which doesn't respond to medication. We get people who are just difficult and, assholes. And when you start working with them, as their brain changes, their personality changes, and they start becoming easier people. Because all of these things are controlled by your brain, and your brain, no matter what you do with your food and medications and nutritional supplements, can never be optimal as long as you're mechanically impeded so that those fluids can't flow into those areas of the brain properly. You know, if you cross your leg, your foot might go to sleep, and it's not dead, but it doesn't work worth a hoot till you uncross your leg and get the flow of blood back in there so your foot wakes up. Well, your brain is in many ways the same way. And the reason that you might be afraid of going in front of a group of people or not like music or the reason that you have such complicated glasses to wear can all be because of your asymmetry in your head.
Wow, that's amazing. And
see, everybody needs it. Everybody, because we're all impeded, and nobody that's doing physical medicine, except for people that are following my methods or creating the same finished product, unless they're doing that, these people are always going to be impeded, and they can never be their best.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You mentioned karate. I'm a multiple black belt and have been seriously injured in a lot of different matches and things like that. So,
are you out of New York?
I'm out of Connecticut. There, I'm a black belt.
Yeah.
Tang Soo
Do. That's where you were before school, right?
Wudu Kwan. Yeah, I lived on the East Coast and then moved back here. Yeah.
So you know, like I have students kind of all over the world, but I'm also in an international practice. So you should come down and see me in Brooklyn next week, and I'll work on you and start unwinding all that stuff left over from all your karate kicks and punches that they got you.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting when we'll talk. So how is it a little bit different from the old treatments that were done by the
me?
Yeah, the Dr. Stober taught you and what they call nasal specific therapy.
School. Driving school.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Don't want you get run over.
I'm sorry. Are you there?
That's okay. Yeah. Yeah. So how is that different from you know, the old-time osteopaths who did cranial sacral therapy to move the skull bones and other methodologies like that? Can you contrast your methodology with those?
Sure. So those techniques do move. Those other techniques do move your bones, and they really can make some improvements, but what happens with them is that they don't help the brain to change. It's kind of like the brain's definition as to what your postural pattern is. You have to change that part in the brainstem so that the body considers this new pattern to be like the new baseline so that everything's modified from there. Instead, those techniques move the bones and don't help the brain change that pattern of the postural pattern, so then you gradually revert and the treatments wear back off. So, for instance, I had a woman come to me with sinusitis, and it turned out that her father-in-law was a well-known cranial osteopath, and he had been working on her for 5 years, once or twice a week, to help her with her chronic sinus headaches, and he was able to help her control her symptoms. She came to me. I worked with her for 4 days. She went back to her father-in-law because she, at that point, had relief because her sinuses were now draining. They didn't back up, so she didn't have sinus headaches anymore. And he said that she had moved more in 4 days than he had been able to accomplish in 5 years of cranial osteopathy.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because, you see, his treatments wore off each time. So the overall improvement was actually rather small, even though it had gone on for 5 years. And during those 5 years, she really didn't have headaches. But she was only 3 or 4 days away from her next treatment continuously just to control her symptoms.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, sometimes people, you know, they sleep on the same side of the bed. They have repetitive jobs. They're hunched over a computer and things like that. So, you know, the forces of nature, the gravitational forces of nature and things like that are going to be there. So how does your technique sort of fight those or right those?
Well, truthfully, of course, we can't entirely. Nobody can, because if you are sitting hunched over, Did you know that for every, let's say you spend 8 hours in a sitting position and you don't move much, that it takes more than a day for your spinal cord from being compressed to expand again into its normal shape? So that if you work 5 days a week at a sedentary job, 8 hours a day, that actually by the time the weekend is over, you're still recovering from the previous week, and then you go back to work again?
Makes sense.
It's a frightening aspect, and I can only deal with part of it, you know?
Right.
I have people get different kinds of chairs, literally two or three chairs, and switch to them during the day. I try to get them to get up and walk around.
Uh-huh.
But at some level, if their lifestyle is traumatic, they're always getting kicked and punched because they're doing mixed martial arts. There's a limit as to what I can do.
Yeah, of course.
I can just warn them and work with them as best I can.
Yeah. So what about how many treatments, does it usually take to see some kind of lasting results there, and how long do treatments take when you're working? You said you intensely work on someone for 4 days, and then you give them a respite.
Yes. Well, so I work with them about a half hour a day, a little longer if I'm by myself, a little or that much or a little shorter if I have an assistant with me. So, because I've developed two-hand bodywork techniques that are reasonably unique. So it's a comprehensive overall body work where one or two of us will be working on your arms, your legs, your back, your chest, your belly, and your skull. And then each day we finish using the little endonasal balloon. Instead of doing 8 or 14 or 20 endonasal balloon insertions in a symmetrical pattern, the old techniques, you hope the person got better, but you treated them symmetrically, so you never could correct their asymmetry. So now we get extremely specific, and we use the balloons once or twice per day. So it's literally the last couple seconds of a half-hour session is where we use the endonasal balloon to push on the central bone in the head, the sphenoid, and when we get that, some of those sphenoid joints to open, the connective tissue inside that has been twisted and distorted over time from all the different things that happened to us, those are coiled tensions. So in a way, when I unlock the head with my little balloon, it's rather like me unlocking the lid on a jack-in-the-box, because what happens after that is the connective tissue, like the spring in the jack-in-the-box, expands, and then the skull starts shifting. And then if I do that 4 days in a row, the person continues to change slower and slower, but change nonetheless for around 3 weeks before they gel into this new pattern. And by that time, the brainstem has accepted this new pattern, and now your body's definition of your structure is now permanently different. And then when I catch you again, maybe, 4 weeks after the previous series or a year after the previous series, I start building from that new baseline that we created from this previous series, and we do it again and make another change and redefinition of the structure.
Now, I know this is a technique. I know the technique helps with emotional things. I'll have an interesting personal story to share with my listeners. So, I didn't get the full neurocranial restructuring that Dr. Howell's talking about, but I did receive a series of the old nasal-specific therapies. And it was very dramatic because years ago, I was a marine biologist before I became a naturopathic doctor. And I had a diving accident where I, inhaled a ton of water and freaked out. I forgot how deep I was, but I was pretty deep underneath there. You're not supposed to do that when you're diving. You're supposed to, if you get a lot of water up your nose, you're supposed to just, push it off. But I surfaced too fast and almost had the bends, and it was a real, real disaster. So then, as I'm doing this, the treatment, I kind of relived that whole thing, and that must have really messed up my head and my spinous process, as well as my cranial bones inside, because I relived the whole trauma, and it was very important to talk about it and work through it, and the doctor administering it helped me out tremendously, and a lot of health problems actually vanished after that. So it's very interesting how locking the bones in a particular pattern of your head created some type of a holographic memory of this of this thing that happened to me, and you're talking 20 years ago, and people don't believe that stuff gets stored in the body, Dr. Howell. Tell us some stories of how releasing people with your techniques kind of got rid of these holographic, you know, memories of mishealth.
So I've seen a lot of people go through those flashbacks like you've had. And fortunately, I've figured out that when we did treatments that are quite harsh, we're more likely to get flashbacks than treatments that are smoother, so that we see fewer of the flashbacks. 20 years ago, 15% of my patients would have flashbacks in a given week. And was that hard on me? Because, you know, I didn't remember that my father beat me.
Right, yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
So that's exactly what I'm talking
there
about.
There I was to catch them, you know.
Wow.
So we've been continuing to figure out how to unwind things. And in 2010, I did a study with the Marines about PTSD cases, because these guys were coming back from Afghanistan, and they'd been like truck drivers and things who had been near mines that had blown off. And so they would see their friends disintegrate, or they would have concussions, and then they would have PTSD and keep seeing the bombs blowing up in their mind's eye, you know?
Yeah.
And so I worked on a half dozen Marines that they had picked out of the guys with PTSD that were stationed at Camp Pendleton waiting to be discharged. Because once you have PTSD bad enough to be diagnosed like that with the Marines, you don't get to do any more Marine activity. So they just have you sit and wait until your enlistment runs out. So I worked on these six guys, and I said I was going to do 6 4-day series, one per month for 6 months. And they told me, well, if you get them better, then we'll do a group of 25, and if you get them better, we're going to open up 10 centers nationwide and do this work everywhere. So the six guys, after 4 series, vote to discontinue treatment because they were so well, went to the commanding officer and said, we wanted to discontinue treatments now. And he said, yeah, it sounded like a lot of malarkey to me. And they said, no, we want you to pick 6 more guys out of the barracks and let them get better, because we're better than we've been all of our lives. We feel better. We're sleeping better. No headaches, no flashbacks. You know, moods are all even. So, you know, and then the guy said, yeah, this sounds like a lot of crap to me. And he pulled the plug on the whole pattern, and then the Marine Corps went no further with it. But it was routine to get people's, because their structure would shift when they had the concussions and those horrible visual experiences, the PTSD, and because that connective tissue would shift the skull, their brain was a different shape, and it didn't go away. And you see those poor people out begging on the streets or selling newspapers or whatever, and until their skull shifts to a more normal alignment pattern, their brains can't work right.
Yeah, they can't.
It's a
Something
mechanical
happens.
Thing. Well, I mean, my car can't go 150 in Indianapolis no matter what. Those guys' brains, or gals' brains with PTSD, until someone fixes their structure, they can't function right, for sure. You can't make water flow uphill without a pump. You can't make blood flow into parts of your brain without using drugs to make maybe the neurotransmitters more concentrated, so that then even with the brain misshapen, a little bit of the neurotransmitter can be driven into those squeezed tissues, like happens with people with depression or learning disability or chronic anxiety, see?
Yeah, I know, because so many ancient medicines talk about that, you know, the chi follows the blood or the fluids, and so in a way, by removing these obstructions, the chi is moving, and that's an important part of, you know, not only Asian medicine, but so many different types of treatments and philosophies of medicine talked about the whole vital force. We talk about it as the vital force in naturopathic thinking. By the old timers talked about restoring the vital force. That's basically what you're doing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And people that are like psychics and medical intuitives and things that can see the energy will talk about how much larger people's auras are when we start fixing their skulls. You know, it's like his aura just came out another 3 feet all the way around.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And because it's real, it feels so much better too. Yeah.
So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the treatments itself, what you're actually doing to folks, and does it hurt, and is it safe for all ages, and can little kids get it, and those types of questions also about your book and training for practitioners and all kinds of things like that. So we're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back with more of the Natural Nurse with Dr. Singh.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss an herb we all know and love, cinnamon.
Ah, the spicy, sweet smell of cinnamon. Everyone recognizes the familiar aroma of this common kitchen spice. But did you know that cinnamon is an exotic plant bark with a long history of medicinal use in many countries throughout the world? Cinnamon was listed as an herb with medicinal properties in Chinese literature as early as 2700 BC. It is described in the Chinese medical text, the Tang Materia Medica, written in 659 AD. Cinnamon also enjoys traditional use in Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing art of India. It is mentioned in the Book of Moses and has been cultivated in Ceylon and Sri Lanka since 1200 AD, where much of the world's supply is still grown.
In Europe, cinnamon was regarded as a rare and precious spice. Many pharmaceutical substances, such as cough syrups and digestive tonics, contain cinnamon. It was also used as an incense and in perfumes. According to Chamberlain, writing in France in 1887, cinnamon possesses the greatest antiseptic properties. Cinnamon is gathered from the dried inner bark of the branches of a small tropical evergreen laurel tree. The bark is peeled off, and as the pieces are dried, they curl up into quills. These are the common cinnamon sticks that are used in herb teas and for baking.
In Chinese medicine, cinnamon is one of the most widely used warming herbs to aid in circulation and digestion. It is a common ingredient in small amounts in tea used for nausea during pregnancy. It is also used following delivery to decrease hemorrhage. Cinnamon raises vitality, warms and stimulates all the vital functions of the body, counteracts congestion, improves the digestive system, relieves abdominal spasms, and aids in peripheral circulation. The essential oils contained in cinnamon include eugenol, cinnamic aldehyde, methyl eugenol, tannins, and mannitol, which give cinnamon its sweet flavor. It also contains cinzenolin and cinzenolol, which are both known insecticides.
Try putting some liquid soap and cinnamon in a spray bottle and use on plants as an organic bug repellent. Cinnamon is also included in many medicinal recipes that are used for lice, scabies, and other skin parasites. Cinnamon has antifungal, antiviral, and bactericidal activities. It has been shown to suppress E. coli, Staphylococcus, and Candida albicans.
So, listeners, the next time you inhale that sweet, spicy aroma, remember there's more to cinnamon than meets the nose as you reach into your natural medicine chest.
Okay, and we're back with Dr. Dean Howe. And if you're just joining us for this part of the program, we'll recap a little bit. I'm Dr. Eugene Zamperone, and we're interviewing Dr. Dean Howe. And he's a graduate of Bastyr University and internationally renowned naturopathic physician who invented and developed a very interesting technique, neurocranial restructuring, which seems to be helping a lot of people all around the world. And Dr. Howe is out there writing a book. Tell us about your book.
Right now I've got two books, actually, just about ready for publication.
Okay.
And one of them is, I guess, the fourth edition of a book about NCR, neurocranial restructuring. And, you know, we're trying to still get the word out that when your child is born and there's been birth trauma, that we need to start working on you right away. We want to work on kids through their through growing up, because when they have accidents and falls and they get hit in sports or fights, someone should fix them, not say, he seems okay. It's like, no, unless he's optimal, unless he's really everything symmetrical and everything good, he's working impaired. And you would fix your car if you've got dents, and then you don't fix your head and body. So,
yeah.
That's what the NCR book is about. Yeah.
And what about the other one?
Well, the other one, actually, four and a half years ago, my second wife died of the complications from cancer, and she had her lungs drained, and they gave her endocarditis, and she ended up with MRSA in a stroke form.
Oh, sorry.
And you know, I was a physical medicine guy, and back in the 80s, I was in family practice, and suddenly here my wife is with inflammatory breast cancer, which only 2% of breast cancers are inflammatory. I didn't know exactly what to do. And so she did some alternative things that didn't work, and then she did some mainstream things that worked even worse. And I started keeping a journal. And so as I learned more about cancer, I would write it in my journal, and that journal is an e-book that we're getting ready to release.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah,
yeah, so it's a hard education.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about what happens when kids are born, and you mentioned that, I have a more primary question. So when we look at the skull, I remember in cadaver class, we see that the sutures of the bones on the outside, they seem like they don't move, and the internal bones are like very paper thin. So you're basically saying that you can actually move these bones, and they have I'm playing devil's advocate here. Of course, I know that, but
you can
move these bones, and they can impact the whole body.
Yes. So, first off, is that you can prove to yourself, sitting right here, listening to me right now, you can feel your bones move. And I'm not talking about opening and closing your mouth, because certainly you can feel your mandible, your jawbone move. But more than that, let's say you take the heels of your hands, you know, and you push in at your temples. That's pushing in on the greater wings of the sphenoid bone. Mm-hmm. And then blow your air out while you press in with your hands. Then when you finish blowing out, hold your hands still and inhale and feel it get tighter.
Mm, yeah.
So you know that your bones are moving a little bit. There is some respiration induced movements, and this is actually the way that cerebral spinal fluid is moving in and out of your head, is actually this motion of the skull that you get with breathing, and you also get a motion even with chewing, to where the bones actually flex and extend, and there's videos that document these subtle cranial movements. And in the same way, when the cranial osteopath moves your bones, or when I do my external cranial manipulation techniques, I can slide those joints that seemingly as if they're fused. Mm. They're really more like ratchets connecting two sprockets, you know, the way that the teeth of the little sprockets, the way they'll interconnect. So the bones can actually slide and move a notch or two sideways each joint surface when you're doing movements, and in that way the bones can shift, and so it also happens the other way around. So let's say you're a baby getting to be born, and normally a baby goes head first through the birth canal, and the birth canal is between the mother's legs, coming through the uterus, opens up and lets the baby out through the vagina. And everyone knows that pregnant women waddle, and that's because there's hormones, elastin primarily, that cause those ligaments to get longer and stretchier, so that the women's pelvis is already widening. That's why she waddles, is to get a wide enough pelvis that that baby's head can fit down through there well. But it never gets as wide as the baby's head, because right. The baby's head will be several inches across, and how could your thighs be 3 or 4 inches apart and still be in your pelvis?
Right.
It can't be. So what happens is that the baby's head, and they try to make it sound all mild, the baby's head goes through cranial molding, they call it. And that means that when the baby's head comes out, they'll either look like a cone head from Saturday Night Live, or they'll look like they've been, that their back of their head is like a turban. So their head gets distorted, and then that connective tissue, like I was talking about in the previous segment, that's inside the skull and outside the brain that gets twisted and distorted, that stuff is twisted and distorted, and then as long as the joints ratchets haven't interlocked, the head will gradually round out, and over the next few days, the baby's head will unwind and get more symmetrical. And the lucky kids move a long ways, and then they end up, you know, like the baby on the Gerber's box, you know, they become handsome, symmetrical people with room enough for all their teeth, and they stand up with nice posture and everything. And then there's the rest whose joints locked up before they got all the way back to their original design, and now they're impaired and they're going to grow up that way. So my nephew was 2 hours old. He'd been vacuum extracted, which meant instead of grabbing him by the forehead and pulling him out, they put a suction cup on the top of his head and pulled him out. And when he came out, he couldn't nurse on my sister's breast, because if you plug your nose and try drinking from a straw, you'll find out that you can't get anything to go through. You have to have air that goes into your the top back of your throat in order to use a straw. So it's the same way for nursing on a nipple.
Wow.
So she calls me up and said, "You got to do something. He's just screaming. And he won't stop because he can't suck."
Wow.
So I went over to the hospital, and I didn't have hospital privileges in these days. This would have been almost 30 years ago. And so I had my daughter hold the door closed, and then I, and she was seven. Then I worked on the kid, and as soon as his head opened up, he made this big sigh because they were breathing through his nose for the first time. And then he latched onto my sister's breast, was able to suck, and he was asleep. So I was able to undo that physician-induced trauma on his head by working on him with the small balloons. And I do the same thing for kids throughout their growing up periods, and they jump higher, they run faster, they walk better. If their feet are splayed or they're pigeon-toed, we can straighten their feet out. It's not corrective shoes that you need. You know, you have to change their head and pelvis so their feet might line up the same way. And if the kids are hunched over, we want them to stand up and have nice posture. We want them to have easy times with teething. All of these things we can get rid of when we work on the kids this way.
I was going to say that, you know, one of my good friends is a behavioral optometrist, and he talks a lot about how much input comes through our eyes, and if our eyes are at different heights, you know, because our head is a little crooked, we'll try to, you know, compensate by crinking our neck so that our visual pattern is, you know, perfectly horizontal. But then if you crook your neck to do that, then your shoulder goes out, and then your thoracics go out,
and then your spine has to have a fun
right thing. And it just kind of it travels like a wave down the entire body, so that, you know, you're trying to maintain this because we have so much input through our, you know, our visual cortex and things like that.
Right, and the central bone that I work on, Eugene, is that sphenoid bone, and it's part of the back of the eye socket. And it also goes out into the temples. So when we do these NCR treatments, we can start evening the eyes out. So people that say one eye is slanted and the other one's not, we can actually gradually restore that so that then their vision is better. We work with people with chronic double vision problems, which is the same thing you were talking about, but more severe, to where even with the head kinking and the brain trying to compensate, they still see two images. And that's because their skull is way off. And as we get their skull better and better, first they get, instead of double images, they get more blurry. And then finally, they start getting a single image, and they don't need the prisms in their glasses, which fool their eyes into getting, you know, the same signal in both eyes.
So does it have to be a trauma? What are some other reasons for why people can have an issue with their you know, skull bones? Yeah, I mean, like, and I use trauma widely, like trauma during birth, trauma during a beating, during a karate match, during a fall off your bike, or whatever, car accident. What are some other reasons
right.
for why?
Well, Well, other traumas could be like the PTSD, which is seeing something that's really upsetting. Your skull shifts with PTSD. That's why their brain functions are different. That's why I get results with PTSD, is because we restore their skull. Then that trauma from what they saw goes away. People can get it from malnourishment as well, because in a sense, that's a kind of trauma, is to feed someone bad food. And their biochemistry changes, and then their structure shifts. Bad dental work, where the fillings or the crowns or the bridges have the wrong height.
Yeah, right.
Wow, that's so powerful, because chewing muscles, man, they'll just mold your head so fast. They're really strong.
Interesting. Yeah, I remember Weston Price talking about how as people degenerate nutritionally, that actually changes their skull shapes, and thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, he inspired Pottinger to do the famous cat experiments, where they fed one group of cats mice and rodents, and they had beautiful fur like tigers, you know, out in the wild. And then there was the cats that they fed raw milk to, and they looked okay, but their skin was a little scurfy, you know, like scaly and stuff. And then there was the cats they fed sweetened condensed milk to, and after 7 generations, they didn't have a normal spine. And I remember when I was in science class in high school, 50 years ago, Pottinger took one cat and wound him around his forearm like a snake, because this cat's spine was so degenerated. Then he started feeding these cats who didn't have all of their teeth, because this is another sign of multiple generations of malnourishment, is the people that don't have all their teeth erupt, like not getting all their wisdom teeth or not getting all of their cusps. Anyway, he started feeding the cats right, and 7 generations later, the experimental group looked just like the control group.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was all reversible, but that was still the trauma of feeding people bad. And then, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise when you look around at our fast food nation to see why I'm horrified to go out and go to a Walmart or to some mall and go shopping. I walk around trying not to look at anybody, because I get too upset because I see how crooked they are.
Yeah, you actually see the degeneration through of the young people through and I know that there's now. What about the idea of braces kind of forcing the teeth into a system that's really not ready for that? Do you work with a lot of orthodontists to kind of help with spreading the bones, working with the palate and things like that, so that the teeth can kind of move normally instead of cramming and creating general a lot of forces? Because you figure, you know, it's the law of physics that if you kind of force something into a space that doesn't really can't contain it, you're going to have problems. Then people have to wear retainers their whole life. So I could see...
And the reason that they need those retainers is because the structural change that the orthodontist created in these situations isn't a stable change. So if you think about what we were talking about in the first the first segment, then, you know, what they do is an unstable shift, so they have to hold it in place forever because the body wants to even out those mechanical forces in the skull. So, yeah, I work with orthodontists. I work with some of the most famous radical orthodontists in the world. So, like, when kids are between 6 and 9, I try to get them to use the BioBlock. This is developed by a 96-year-old dentist who still practices in England named John New. And 50 years ago, he got kicked out of the biggest dental school in Europe, where he was tenured faculty, for creating a method that didn't require tooth extractions or braces later in life, because you kept the kids' faces to develop, and they're so wide they had room for all of their teeth, and their faces grew symmetrically, so then you didn't need to think about orthodontia and stuff for the rest of their life. And the response of the medical establishment 50 years ago was, remove this man from the dental school and try to ignore him.
Wow.
So it's really important that the orthodontist work with somebody like me, so that we can make sure that the orthodontic pattern that they're choosing to imprint on people is one that is structurally sound, and that we then stabilize their structure at the end of the orthodontist so that they have no reason to revert to their old pattern, and then they don't need the lifelong retainer either.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes a lot of sense.
It's wonderful stuff.
What about plastic surgery and cosmetic types of things? What are some applications of your technique for those things?
So, you know, because part of this work is going through the nose into the top of the throat and inflating the balloon for about 1 second, but it's kind of like having a little rubber hammer to pound out dents in a car fender. I have a little rubber balloon that I push out the dents in your head.
Wow.
So I make your cheekbones come out, I straighten your nose, I even the nasal bridge out, I make your eyes appear to be the same shape, and therefore your eyes look like they're the same size and they don't tilt anymore. As your temporal bones, that's where your ears are, as they rotate into symmetrical positions, your chin moves into the middle of your face, so then your mouth no longer has a tilt. And then as that happens, your posture is going to improve, so you're not going to have such slumped shoulders. Now, some people, after a lot of tooth extractions, just using the little nasal balloons and the NCR techniques is enough to get them feeling better, but not enough to make them look really good. And so I even have a device that, well, the initial prototype to understand would be kind of like a helmet, a football helmet, and I have a cage made, and then we make a retainer kind of appliance with little hooks on it. We use rubber bands to literally pull their face forward, and it takes 5 or 10 minutes a day to start growing new facial bones. And my first case in 3 years, I grew 15 millimeters more face for him. And by that time, it decompressed his midbrain, because the place that controls your basic moods is right behind your nose. And that's where anxiety and chronic depression and obsession and so forth, they're coming from the amygdala and the hippocampus and that stuff in the midbrain. And those areas, as we pull the face bones out even a few millimeters, suddenly those areas of the brain function much better. And then instead of being stuck with always depressed or always worried and anxious, you start having all of the proper moods. And when somebody dies, you're sad. And when somebody is happy, you're happy too. And then you get all the emotions you were supposed to have, which were mechanically denied to you because of the way your structure was locked up.
Yeah, I know. If
that makes make you look better, too, and you don't need the plastic surgery. And the wrinkles go away because we stretch the skin tight, and it no longer hangs in wrinkles and folds and creases. Because it's really like when your face bones collapse, it's kind of like a tent where you let instead of having all the strings and the poles pulling your tent nice and tight so there's no wrinkles, instead it's like you've loosened up those guy wires and they start to get wrinkles and floppy tent fabric. And your face does the same thing after you've had various kinds of traumas.
Now, what about its applications for distal areas of the body? You know, I gave an example with trying to keep your eyes horizontal, and that eventually can, you know, kind of create issues with your ankles all the way down to your feet.
That's true.
Have you seen things with, you know, people with osteoarthritis of the knees and whatever, by changing their head structure, their skull structure, it manifests and kind of percolate down to those areas?
Sure. So here's an example. If you know someone that's having bad knees, you know, and they've maybe had cartilage problems already in their knees, watch how they stand. When they just stand, like, in line, or they're just standing waiting, you know, to get into the theater or something, when they're standing there, if you look at the line that their leg has, their knee will be hyperextended. That means that if you're facing them directly, their knee will be kind of like at the back. So the guy will come down, and then the knee will bend, and the foot will be slightly in front of the knee. And when you have your knee lined up like that, you're carrying your weight where your cartilage is thinnest. Because you were actually designed, when you stand, to have your knees slightly flexed. So what happens is that the people with the hyperextended knees are the people whose knees wear out the fastest.
Interesting.
And that's created by their posture. No matter how many times you remind them to stand up straight, they're still going to forget because they're hardwired in that brainstem to have that bad posture. So when we start doing the NCR treatments, we can improve their overall postural pattern to where their pelvis moves enough relative to their feet that the knees start slightly flexing, and then we start carrying their weight where the cartilage is thicker. And if they haven't had all their cartilage taken out yet, then their knees are going to last a lot longer without needing to be replaced. And then the same kind of idea, worrying about the pelvis position, which is determined a lot by the head position, is that we can treat bunions too. So I can keep people away from the bunion surgeon. It won't make all the distortion in their feet go away, but at least the bunion will be slowed down, and or the progress will be stopped. And that's by moving the head and pelvis structures to where the feet no longer twist, which is why the feet twisting, trying to hold on to the ground and be stable, causes that distortion at the base of the big toe that the bunion sticks out. So as we get the pelvis so that it's not, it's in a stable position and the foot doesn't twist anymore, and then they stop developing more bunion.
Wow. Well, we only have a few more minutes in the program, so let's talk a little bit about like your teaching schedule and that you're actually training, because, you know, you don't want to keep all this information to yourself, Dr. Howell. You want to get it out there so that the next generation can benefit from this fabulous treatment you've developed. Tell us a little bit about that, and also how listeners can get in contact with you and either to get your book or come in, and then you're traveling, I guess, around to do some teaching and whatever, so here's an opportunity for you.
Okay, so first off is that, yes, I do train professionals, and my hardest thing with health professionals is to get them to actually do the procedure the way that I prefer it to be done, and so the compliance has been kind of low, so there's literally a couple hundred people that I've trained in the past, and many of them are still doing endocranial, endonasal type therapies, but a lot of them aren't following my protocols anymore, and they tend to be a lot rougher, and what we're finding is that the results are worse with harsher treatments. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you can get bigger moves by being harsher, and instead we alarm the nervous system, put them into shock, and they literally tighten up and they make fewer changes. So that's the first thing, is that you'll find other people that have even been trained by me that won't follow the protocols properly. There's a website called ncrdoctors.com, and that group, there's maybe 15 people there. They try to follow my procedures well. And then others, usually once a year in the fall, I think this year it's slated for the week before Thanksgiving, we'll have some professional training. And then we do 8 days of training and try to get them to follow the procedures properly, and then I continue to sort of mentor them, and because it takes a number of months of perseverance in order to have it work well. We're looking at starting a newer kind of business where I train people like physical therapists and accomplished massage therapists to do these treatments, and then we'll be doing it more as a it's ending.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Well, be sure you come and look for me at drdeanhowell.com.
Dean Howell.com. Howell with two L's.
That's right.
Thanks a lot again, and take care, Dr. Howell. Appreciate your input, and that does it for another edition. Bye-bye, folks.
Thanks.
Have a great one.